Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that down. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wait.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cut, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
You know, people don't really understand how obsessed I am with winning. It's not, I don't care about anything else on a basketball court but winning.
I'll be bowling, watch me bowl. I just caught the phone with me. Watch me bowl, I be bowling, watch me bowl. I be bowling, watch me bowl, now watch me bowl. I just got the phone with me, I just got the phone with me, huh? Yeah. Watch me bowl, I be bowling, watch me bowl. I just got the phone with Mink, let it drag all on the floor. I could go back to the store, I could buy a couple more. They should drop the red carpet like I just won an award. I just spent a couple thousands on these new Christian LeBountains. Now these bitches so astounding, got them dripping like a fountain. And my wrist is cold, they're heavy, bitch, I'm fresh up from the mountains, yeah, bitch, I'm fresh from public housing and I just left out the bank. Hit the dealer, get a range, two stacks for the main. Party in for the French gang. The way I bowl, I should be in the Hall of Fame, gang. The way I bowl, EA Sports, I'm in the game. Wow, I'm sourcing out of Fendi. Hit Valencia, hit Giuseppe. Hit Javinci, if I try to fuck this, she gon' let me. A living legend, all this Christian on me like a reverend. If I'm bowling, then who's reppin'? Tell him. Watch me bowl, yeah. Watch me bowl, I be bowling, watch me bowl. I just caught the phone with me. I just caught the phone with me. Yeah. Watch me bowl, I be bowling, watch me bowl. Huh? I be bowling, watch me bowl, now watch me bowl. Yeah. Baby, I just caught the phone with me. Yeah. I just caught the phone with me. Huh? Jack God, I be bowling, breath fall. Watch me bowl. I just popped the perk, I'm feeling in the stars. I be bowling like I'm Jordan. I be feeling like I'm Spalding. I be swerving in that foreign to the point I'm feeling nauseous. Got bitch, open scamming and extortion. Wow. Take a kilo, break it down into portions. And I just left out the bank. Hit the dealer, get a range. Two stacks for the mains. Got a year for the frames. Dang. Watch me bowl. I be bowling, watch me bowl. Yeah. Watch me bowl, I be rolling, watch me bowl. I just got the phone with me. I just got the phone with me. I just got the phone with me. Yeah. Watch me bowl, I be rolling, watch me bowl. Yeah. Watch me bowl, I be rolling, watch me bowl. Swish. I just got the phone with me. I just got the phone with me.
People don't really understand how obsessed I am with winning. It's not, I don't care about anything else on a basketball court but winning.
I be bowling, watch me bowl. I just caught the phone with me. I just caught the phone with me. Ha! Watch me bowl, I be bowling. Watch me bowl, I be bowling, watch me bowl. I just got the full of pink, let it drag all on the floor. I could go back to the store, I could buy a couple more. They should drop the red carpet like I just won an award. I just spent a couple thousands on these new Christian LeBountains. Now these bitches so astounding, got them dripping like a fountain. And my wrist is cold and heavy, bitch, I'm fresh up from the mountains. Yeah, bitch, I'm fresh from public housing. And I just left out the bank, hit the dealer, get a range. Two stacks for the main, party in for the French gang. The way I bowl, I should be in the Hall of Fame, gang. The way I bowl, EA Sports, I'm in the game. Wow, I'm so thin, not a Fendi. Hit Valencia, hit Giuseppe, hit your bitchy. If I try to fuck this, she gon' let me. A living legend, all this Christian on me like a reverend. If I'm bowling, then who's reppin'? Tell him. Watch me bowl, yeah. Watch me bowl, I be bowling, watch me bowl. I just caught the fullness, man. I just caught the fullness, man. I just caught the fullness, man. Yeah. Watch me bowl, I be bowling, watch me bowl. Huh? I be bowling, watch me bowl, now watch me bowl. Yeah. Hey. Baby, I just caught the fullness, man. Yeah. I just caught the fullness, man. Huh? Jack God, I be bowling, breath fall, watch me bowl. I just pop the perk, I'm feeling in the stars. I be bowling like I'm Jordan, I be feeling like I'm Soldin. I be swerving in that foreign to the point I'm feeling nauseous. Got bitch, open scamming and extortion, wow. Take a kilo, break it down into portions. And I just left out the bank, hit the dealer, get a range. Two stacks for the mains, Cartier for the frames, gang. Watch me bowl, I be bowling, watch me bowl, yeah. Watch me bowl, I be bowling, watch me bowl. I just caught the fullness, man. I just caught the fullness, man. I just caught the fullness, man. Yeah. Watch me bowl, I be bowling, watch me bowl. Yeah. Watch me bowl, I be bowling, watch me bowl. Swish. I just caught the fullness, man. I just caught the fullness, man.
Yo. it's a worldwide panic, and you suckers can't stand it. So you niggas ain't thugs, motherfucker. It's a worldwide panic. It's a worldwide panic. It's a vibe so men can't control. That's what this deep inside of me. It's built of love and pain, and it causes this world's tragedy. It's a worldwide panic. It's a worldwide panic. It's a worldwide panic. And you fuckers can't stand it. So you niggas ain't thugs, motherfucker. It's a worldwide panic. It's a worldwide panic. It's a worldwide panic. And you fuckers can't stand it. So you niggas ain't thugs, motherfucker. It's a worldwide panic.
What's the deal, y'all? This your man, King Eric, the Media Assassin. We got a doubleheader lined up. I got my host, T-Max, with the facts in the building.
What a do, y'all. Another tremendous Thursday. OTC up in the building. We alive and direct, and we are ready to give it to you. What a do, King?
Yes, sir, man. The first, we got a doubleheader lined up. This brother here, representing New York City, pushing that first single, yeah. Title Ball. I'm going to go say this, man, after I looked at the video, this brother probably got one of the flyest chinchillas I ever seen in my life. We got to get one of those.
Styling and profiling, and indeed, man.
Straight buzzing in the underground. He's on the line right now. So let's welcome aboard Shady Baby to Off the Cuff Radio, man.
Yep. Off the Cuff Radio. What's going on, man? Thank you for having me. I appreciate you guys.
Man, look, thank you for coming on, man. Great to have you with us. What's going on, man?
Everything good, man. Everything's good, man. Just pushing this new single as much as I can.
Definitely.
Gotta,
I mean,
you
obviously
gotta put
got
chinchillas on the market first, brother.
Look.
Oh, man, I appreciate you tapping in, man, especially to the video, man. It's good you, like, you got to see the visual that with the song. I feel like the visual makes the song a lot better.
Well, one thing about it is it's definitely your visuals are always a professional presentation in terms of production about the product that you're pushing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, definitely the chinchillas are definitely a good look with it, man, in terms of obviously that buzz you're building in terms of, you know, the hustle that you're putting out there, man, obviously is doing well because we know chinchillas ain't cheap at all.
They most definitely not, man.
Devin, so tell us a little bit about yourself, man. You know, welcome. Tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, where you repping, you know, how you got into the game. I mean, the floor is yours, please.
Shady Baby, Harlem, New York. Long story short, man, you know, I make great music, feel good music. Besides Ball, I got a 5-song EP out. I mean, music was always a part of my life, man. I can't even tell you how I came across it. It just from listening to my mother, like listening to the oldies, the Al Greens and whatnot, just, you know, music was always around. So, you know, it was just, you know, natural for me to, you know, become a part of music. It's something that I love to do. You know, just besides, you know, of course everybody wants the money, but I actually enjoy this, like a basketball player. I enjoy playing basketball. I enjoy doing music, so definitely.
Man, and look, coming from Harlem, look, you come from a very distinguished line of hustlers and MCs, man. Of course, Cam'ron, you know, the legendary. Shout out to Big Bro DJ K Slade representing, man. I mean, of course, Guy Fisher. You know, I mean, a lot of legendary luminaries come out of Harlem, man. Pee Wee Kirkland, you know. I mean, the names go on, man.
Definitely. You know, hopefully I can add my name to the list, man. That's what it's all about.
And we can't forget Big L. We can't forget Big L either. We got to mention Big L.
Of course, nah. You can never. Yeah, never. You got to always mention the great.
Definitely. So, I mean, as you got into it with the process of doing the music, what was it like in terms of really going full steam with it in terms of when you started writing, what it was like just putting your bars together, you know, really understanding your cadence, structure, everything of it in terms of the process, the progress in terms of the progress and how, you know, you polished it along the way?
I mean, I definitely would say it come from just keep going to the studio and just keep getting comfortable with being in the studio and actually laying down your vocals, and, you know, everything will come with it. You know, you don't, even if the first song doesn't come out how you want it to sound, you know, don't get discouraged because, you know, sounds develop as you keep going to the studio. I mean, the process for me, man, it comes either way. I could write down a song, I could freestyle a song. It just, you know, it's just all about the energy. You know, I'm a real firm believer in energy, even with the music. So, you know, that'd be my creative process. You know, just listening to production from there, you know, just however I attack the song, it comes. Whether I write down some lyrics or whether I just try to hum to it and flow to it and some words come along like that. You know, either way, you know, just staying active with you know, listening to music, and, you know, just creating it no matter how it comes.
Definitely, man. And, I mean, all the way, you know, obviously, you know, you got that Harlem energy. Because one thing about Harlem is known for being fly, flashy, and fabulous. I mean, all the way from, you know, 139th to 125th, you know what I'm saying? You know, Malcolm X and Lennox, you know what I'm saying? It's like you definitely have it where you embody the spirit of what it means to be from there and such. When you look at it in terms of, you know, you doing the music, when did you realize that you started getting a little bit of a buzz out there in terms of everybody started, you know, rocking with you?
I'll say it came from a little bit of naiveness. I didn't even know people were rocking with me. I was, like I said, I was just doing it because it was something I liked to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just little by little, people, you know, with, you know, basically just outright saying, yo, when are you going to drop something new? And then that just gave me the confidence to keep going. And, you know, I really started to notice, like, I could do this music thing when I perform. I think it comes out more better, I think, for me when a person sees me in the physical form. And, like, just doing my first show, I stepped into a crowd that didn't know me from a hole in the wall, and when I left, they were really, really rocking with me. So that, you know, I think from that day forward, I had the confidence.
That's dope.
Hey, what up?
I had to
charge my laptop
for
a minute.
You good, man? Just talking about beginnings, and just about, the progress in terms of this movement and everything, and about, how everybody was, getting noticed on. Now, one thing about it, man, what do artists have to understand in terms of starting out, in terms of realizing that this is a marathon and not a race, and that, your buzz has to hit the best element of it come from an organic place in terms of really finding people who really rock with you? Because a lot of times you see people do a lot of foolish stunts, a lot of shenanigans to gain attention, but it's not based off the music more than it is, acting in a certain way.
Basically, I would say, like, you're asking me, what does a new artist have to understand with understanding it's a marathon, not a race, right?
Right.
All right. Well, basically, I would say to that is they have to understand that a lot of people are making music nowadays, especially with digital platforms. So
right.
You have to remain consistent. You have to not get discouraged no matter how gruesome, being a musician could be. And you have to be willing to sacrifice. That would be the three main things to me. You have to be willing to sacrifice and put money behind yourself, because who would want to put money, these million-dollar labels and these people with the money, they're not going to want to put money behind you if they see you wouldn't even put it behind yourself. So I think those three are the main factors with an artist that's new and trying to do music.
And that's real, man. I mean, when you deal with a situation like that, and see, this is the one thing artists have to understand, because, we've had a lot of people on the show. Shout out to Steve Sola, Chill from Compton's Most Wanted, so many others. And they told us about what it was like in terms of whether being in the hood, like Chill did, in terms of how they started out in Compton with Compton's Most Wanted, or Steve Sola, the Mix King, who's done so much stuff with Mobb Deep, and so many others, about how labels, remember that conversation, King, we had with Soul, about how you talked about how those labels were throwing all that money around back in the day in terms of, artists coming out and just what them deals were like back in the 90s and early 2000s and all that.
But the average video budget was like, what, $2 million?
Yeah, I mean, when it really started jumping like that. Yeah. So, I mean, but artists got to understand, like you said, man, that you've got to, put money behind yourself in terms of it. A lot of times, and when you're talking about putting money behind yourself, break it down to our audience in terms of it, in terms of where the budgeting should be, in terms of where it's going to yield the most dividends.
I'm still learning. I don't have all the answers. I want to state that first, but in my opinion, I would say, definitely Google Ads, radio placements, like do a lot. Even if it's a radio station you're not familiar with, do them, because you don't know the audience they have.
Right.
If you're gonna put your music up, if you're gonna put money behind your music, I think those three are the way to go.
Definitely.
Yeah,
and I also think, too, man,
it's a part of the changes that's going on now, because, as we go into a new era, like a new digital era, it's like a lot of those
Oh,
deals.
Sorry. I would add one thing to that. I'm sorry. I would add blogs to that.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And, one thing, too, King and myself, we talk about a lot on the show, is how a lot of artists put a lot of money in terms of a look, in terms of trying to sell an image, but they don't make sure that they, in terms of studio time, they don't make sure in terms of when their music come in, that it's...
Mm-hmm.
but it's not mixed right, you know, all that stuff. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You want to make sure you're putting even the money behind little things like mixing and mastering and making sure the song sounds quality. Like you said, like a lot of rappers get caught up in the image part, but it's a lot that comes with doing music.
Yeah, they say it's 80% business and 20% music, actually.
I agree to that.
Yeah, and also from that perspective, too, man. Oh, go ahead, Ken. Go ahead.
I said, because everything is about the imagery, it's about the marketing, it's about getting the right product out there. Creating the artist, basically, like 40%, because you got a lot of people that are nice with it, like some of the nicest spitters, but when it comes to getting the business out there, it's a totally different beast. They don't get it handled. That's why you got these corporations taking everything from them and making a profit while they're getting up.
Yeah. And that's something is definitely important. You know, the business king, like you were saying, in that aspect of it, you know, it's definitely staying on top of what's going on with everything and just understanding the process with it all. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Where is he? Is he still with us?
He's still with his brother. Of course, I'm still here. I'm right here.
Okay. Just making sure. Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, please, you know, we don't want to dominate the conversation. Please, give us your thoughts on that as well.
I basically agree with everything you guys saying. That's why I was more so quiet. I was just also, you know, like part of these interviews, too, is more so hearing what you guys have to say, too. You know, I want to soak up knowledge myself. So you're not dominating the conversation at all. I agree with everything y'all said.
Yeah, this is good. Yeah, cause what we do here, man, it's like it's not really interview per se. It's more so you jumping in the cipher, like you know, block. We talk. You know what I mean? It ain't like an interview because you tell anybody to come on the show. You don't want to feel like an interview because people don't like the word interview. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Nah, I know what you mean, man. It's just more so like a conversation. We conversing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know when people come on and talk an interview, they're thinking job interview or you're thinking standard questions. Nah, man. Be the first one probably to notice that you got the chinchilla up there, bro.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys, man. You guys gonna play the song for y'all listeners?
Oh yeah, we did that early. Boy. We did that. We played the first two songs that you did. We played the one that was the first single with the visuals, and we played the other joint, Got 'Em, which was pretty hard.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I try to give a different sound in that. I try to be versatile with my music, bro.
Now, speaking of versatile, that's a perfect segue. A lot of the lament right now with the current hip-hop is that, you know, everything seems to sound the same. Everybody's tapped into a formula that they feel is going to yield the results that they want. So by proxy, there is an inherent lack of originality. How do you feel about the hip-hop game today where a lot of artists are coming in and, you know, terms of certain sounds, certain flows, you know, everything, even fashion, in terms of how maybe the originality and the individuality has been compromised in the name of quick commercial success?
I definitely feel that way. I feel that way, but I also, you know, I kind of blame the gatekeepers of hip hop because they're kind of allowing it, you know, whatever, like, you know what I mean? Whatever people, like, these are what the block, like, I mean, I can't really blame the artist. I mean, the artist is trying to come up and if the direction of hip hop is telling them to do it this way, I can't really get mad at them for trying to do it the way, you know, only the specials are going to be like, I'm sticking to my sound and, you know, I'm doing it for this. But, you know, a lot of people are doing it for a way out. You know what I mean?
That's
so
true.
It's like, you know what I mean? So I kind of feel like it's kind of hard for artists to be original nowadays. Like, I feel like the consumers won't allow them to because it's like, this is what I want to hear. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. And it's complicated because King and myself are older. So we come from a era where the metrics were different in terms of what it meant to be entry. Shout out to Uncle Rich up in the Bay Area, Richie Rich, you know, in Oakland. And, you know, we've had him on the show a couple of times, and Richie told us about back in the day, you know, like, you know, you weren't getting in that booth until the heads, you know, until the OGs felt like you were dope enough to get in the booth putting it out there. Because, you know, the OGs were helping put a lot of money up to get the young boys out, but they had to hear your music in terms of knowing that you was repping the town right.
I feel like the digital platform, like, you know, it's good. Like, I can't say, because it's like, I'm not against digital platforms. They're good. You know what I mean? An artist could be independent now and drop. But where I feel like it kind of messed things up was more where I feel like it kind of messed it up was, like anybody can drop music now. So, literally million songs are coming out a day.
Right. And from that end of it, you're absolutely right, because there's so much. We live in an age now to where, you know, like I said, the era we came up in, you know, when artists, there was like a big rollout, especially for a big artist, if there was an album getting ready to drop. I mean, God knows. I mean, if you saw a video, if you saw a video on BET in terms of Rap City, or Video Music Box, or Yo MTV Raps, it was like, you know, you knew what it went to in terms of getting a video crew, I mean, getting a song out, you know, so it really, really was a lot. And now it's like you said, a digital era, on one hand it has expedited in terms of efficiency because everybody can work at a fast pace now, but like you said also, conversely speaking, it's bad because now everybody is jumping into it from a perspective of thinking that they can be an artist. And the game has become watered down as a result. And the reality is we love this culture of ours, hip-hop. But the problem is now everybody's basically is using this as a quick out. You know, they think, yeah, you know, I'm going to stand, I'm going to make a video, you know what I mean? I'm going to get on, and even if the shit is whack, you know, I'm still going to get a view. And I'm like, come on, man. I'm like, you know, and that's where the shenanigans come in. That's where the sideshows
come in. Right? That's where the shenanigans come in at.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, I'm like, you know, because back in the day, like, this was something sacred. It's like, yo, it's like, you know, we held a deal. Like, you were not going to do a video and have some whack shit. It was just not going to, like, dude, you was going to get clowned for that shit. You know, and that's now we got to place for the clown show, you know, the sideshow has become the main event. You know, it's being malignant rather than, you know, contributing. When you look at how, you know, the game has gone from an independent level, because a lot of these artists are doing it independent, and you look at how you are moving, are you comfortable being in the independent lane, or down the line would you like to sign to a major?
I mean, I would love for, you know, for the independent lane to pop off for me. But I know what's against me, though. I'm realistic to know what's against me. Can it happen? Of course. But
right.
I'm definitely open to signing to a major. So if any major is listening, hit me. But I'm open to signing to a major, but, you know, the situation just has to make sense.
Understood. Yeah.
In finding your style and creating your craft, man, what was your main inspiration?
Wow, man, that is a tough question, man. I'm really a fan of hip hop, so like my day, I would literally play 40 different artists, man, like from old music to new music. And but speaking from, like, influences, like, who I listen to the most and who, like, I can rap over, I would say Jay-Z, Kanye, Drake, Cameron, like the list kind of goes on, but I would say those four: Cameron, Jay-Z, Kanye, and Drake.
Very distinguished list. Yeah, I'm here. Very distinguished.
That goes to show you how much of a student he is, man. Because you know you studying the hit makers, and you studying the legendary cats, and you studying the people that are heavily underappreciated.
Right.
So those artists you named, we're gonna play a game. Those names you named, we're gonna name them, and we're gonna ask you to give us a distinguishing characteristic of their style that you find that is, they're really, really, you feel in terms of how they contribute. Okay, Cam'ron. What is it about Cam'ron that you think is really special about him?
I would say it's humor.
Yeah, it's humor. Yeah,
okay.
He has a crazy personality.
It's hilarious. Yeah, right. Like, and you can hear it in his songs. Like, he's having literally fun in when he was making music.
Yeah. Okay, Jay-Z.
I would say his aura, like his. Oh, that's kind of hard, baby. It's a lot of words to describe that, man. But I would say it's wit. It's wit. I'm going to say witty. Very witty.
Okay, Kanye. All right, what about Kanye?
I would say his this game is, I never played this game before. Kanye, I would say his awkwardness, but in a good way though. It's tough that he's unique. He's one of a kind. Kanye, one of a kind.
Yeah, definitely. We said what we said about Kanye not agreeing with everything he does, but one thing about it, we will never call that man whack. Kanye is, he's special. When he is locked in, Kanye is special. Okay, what about Drake?
His versatility.
Aubrey is special. You know, people try to malign him because he didn't fit the quote-unquote stereotypical,
rapper.
Because Drake is like that. Yeah, Drake was like that kid. When we look back at where he got into it with Meek Mill and they were battling, it's like Drake is that nerd in class that you think really is soft until you piss him off enough that he decides, okay, I'm going to show you what I can really do on a microphone.
You do. Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
And I mean, and when he let that tiger out with Back to Back, it was, he said, you getting bodied by a singing nigga. I'm like, Twitter, like trigger fingers turned to Twitter fingers. We were like, whoa. I'm like, okay, Drake, we ain't know you had that in you, but okay.
Yeah. I say it wasn't a surprise to me, though. I kind of wasn't surprised.
Yeah, but you figure Drake didn't really come off.
What's crazy about the blog era, and those guys came from the blog era, is that you could tell those guys can get down when they want to, but they were perceived as off. Like, you know, the Kendricks and the Drakes and the, who else came in? And Kendrick, Drake, and the J. Coles and all them, they ushered a new era. And people didn't want to really test them because they ain't really had that feeling like, we don't know these dudes can really get down on the mic. Right. So we just going to let them guys be. Like Kendrick, even with the control verse.
Yeah. And, I mean, Kendrick was somebody that when he dropped it, I mean, it was something where, you know, when you look at that era, even if it was not that far long ago, you've seen these dudes who are kind of having mainstream success, but people didn't think that from that mainstream. It's like people look at them one way and have them pigeonholed, thinking that they're only going to be at one level of talent, which is not true. They have a wide array of talent that makes them who they are in terms of getting as successful. And every so often they have to drop a little something to let everybody know that, yes, I'm really with this. I'm from the culture. I'm good at what I do. When you think about how the game is today, how it's marketed, when you look at, you know, basically how resources are being distributed, how do we get back into really, really, really bringing the people to good music as opposed to letting people who are not necessarily of the culture dictate what should be culture?
Repeat the question. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're good. Yeah, I was just saying, seeing how the resources are being diverted to certain artists today of maybe not as much talent as others, how do we get the people back on understanding what the real culture is instead of being dictated by those who are not of the culture, trying to give definition and disseminating to the hip-hop audience what culture should be as opposed to what it actually is in all, in terms of authentication and everything else?
I feel like it starts with both the audience and
mm-hmm.
and like the people that, like, you know, I don't want to use the term gatekeep hip hop, but like the bloggers, the label execs. I feel like it got to
right.
start there, like, you know what I mean? And I feel like a lot of people that are in these places, they just look at numbers. The numbers,
right,
I
right,
feel like
right.
we got to get that out. We got to really, like, start evaluating talent. I think, like, that's where, you know, I really feel like it started with the labels. The labels, you know, if you know you're not, you don't have a certain amount of, you know, streams and things of that nature, then you get evaluated on how much you can really, like garnish to them. And I guess, you know, and that makes sense, but I mean, I got emails from like A&Rs, like, to this day that told me flat out, like, I don't care about talent. I care about who you can bring out, who, like, stuff like that. And it was just, you know, it was just like, wow, these are the people that's running hip-hop nowadays. So I think it got to start with the labels, and then the audience has to, you know, put the foot down and saying, we don't want to hear this shit. We want to hear real hip-hop. Excuse my language.
Yeah. No. It's off the cuff. Please, say what you like. And you know you're absolutely right.
In charge of the culture.
Yeah. And you know, it's crazy because what you said, man, makes so much sense from a perspective of how you have a lot of people wanting to, it's become a massive metric in terms of what they feel the numbers will be. When you say about who you can bring out and everything, that's why I think we have an over proliferation of a lot of features at times that really are just random and aren't organic. They don't really seem to make sense, but it's all about who people can bring in, who they think will sell. You know, back in the day, with a video feature or a feature on a song, like, it was either unexpected or it made sense or both. And now everybody's just looking at it from a perspective of it's just more or less an opportunity, a photo opportunity, rather than something that is really, really, really going to make the song pop. And it can come off as awkward or even forced. And that's not what good music is. Good music is organic, it's spontaneous, it's genuine, it's authentic. It makes sense in terms of when it's finally, you know, brought to the public. Who are some of the artists that you're feeling right now in the game that you would love to work with?
I would say like literally just, you know, one of the greats, I said Drake probably, you know what I mean? But, you know, I'm open to working with any artist, you know, as long as the energy's there and the sound matches, then, you know, we can make music. I'm not close to working with any others, really.
Definitely. Now, do you have any other interests outside of music? Go ahead, King.
I said the frequency has the match.
Right.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
Definitely. Now, is there any other interests you have outside of music in terms of, like, acting or writing or just anything like that? I mean...
I mean, I definitely like the right. I like the design clothes. I actually have a clothing line now. I gotta start putting more time to, but like that's definitely, you know, another hobby of mine. Designing clothes.
Definitely. How do you feel about the fashion in the game today in terms of where the aesthetics have gone in reference to what the emphasis is on?
That's one thing I can't say people's being original with. I feel like the fashion is it took another like a different level from like you'll see the way Young Thug expresses himself to the way that people like Jim Jones or like even Kanye with the look that he has and the ASAP Rocky, everybody stands out with the way they, you know, with the way they wear their stuff. Like I feel like everybody's original in that sense. Like, it's not just the like, you know, back then, you know, in the golden age, it was certain brands that people wore. But now, you know, people are wearing anything and actually making it look good.
Yeah, and you know, that's something where, you know, fashion is fluid. Yeah, it's fluid. Fashion is fluid. And I think that's where we see a lot of people have their opinions about it because it changes so much. I mean, even in the past 5 years, people aren't necessarily rocking, you know, the same as they used to. And it is a bit of a difference, you know, from, you know, the old, you know, from the 90s to now. Doesn't mean it's all bad. You know, some of it, in full disclosure, I wouldn't wear, you know, it's just not my thing. But that doesn't mean it's bad in terms of, you know, somebody else may not, think it's bad,
I got Rick, it's only bad when you in your 50s, dog, and you wearing jeans tighter. You know what I'm saying? You wearing the spandex. What up? It's only bad when you in your 50s. Don't be hanging out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing we not doing. We ain't wearing no tight jeans and stuff over here. That ain't happening.
What I gotta say, cause you know I gotta ad lib. You gotta hit the gym first to fit them jeans, dog. Straight up. You don't want to see chubby dudes in skinny jeans, but that's not a plus.
Nah. And I think that's the crux of fashion anyway. That's the the era of it in terms of it. Because I think fashion in its sense of it should be really all about what works for you in terms of what you wear. I think it's about you being able to wear something that I think just really, it's an expression of style, but also know what looks good on you. And I think that's something men and women both do a lot of times. They both get into these situations where they are wearing stuff that maybe probably isn't the best for them in terms of what brings out the best with them. You know, but there's certain pieces that are very, like, timeless. Like, you know, rocking a chinchilla mink, you know what I'm saying? I mean, the fur coat, you know, I mean, that's shady. I mean, that's like vintage fresh. That's dope in any era. That resonates class, cool, you know, swag, anything else that elicits style.
Thank you.
You know what I'm saying?
It's funny that you say that, and I really, really appreciate that more than you know. Thank you. And, like, that was what I was trying to come with the video more so. You can watch that 20 years from now, but it'll still resonate. You know what I mean? Like, people have been wearing fur coats for 100 years, so I feel like that was, like, you know, like that was the mindset. And then, you know, watch me ball, you know, playing basketball. Like, I feel like it fit every category. It was Harlem. It was timeless. It matched everything that you just articulated.
Yeah, and I tell people, if you really don't want to know how far the flyness of fashion goes, look at the Jeezy Gucci Mane battle a year and a half ago when Jeezy came out in the mink. You know, shout out to
Jeezy. Right?
Yeah, man. I mean, shout out to Boo Rossini, Jeezy, DJ Ace, you know, CTE World, El Jefe. You know, those are my guys. And I mean, of course, that old picture back in the day with Magic Johnson rocking, you know, the joint. Of course, You know, with Earl Monroe posed. Yeah, Joe Namath. I mean, Earl Monroe posed on
Rolls Royce. Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just certain.
Is a sentiment of hip-hop, man. Even Frank Lucas
rock. Yeah. And it's one thing about it is there's certain elements of it where you're dealing with style, whether it's a Rolex watch, whether it's a Coogi sweater, you know, whether it's a mink coat or a leather coat. There's certain elements that he listed boss status in terms of not only the streets but the fashion. It means you are tuned in. You are perfectly in sync with what you're, you know, expressing to everybody else, that you really have an understanding because it's, you know, it's, and it's not only about the money rocking it, it's about knowing how to put it together. Because if you really don't have a sense of style or you're a cornball, that means you got a whole bunch of currency that you spend on being a cornball that doesn't change the status of you being a cornball. You know, just like if you, it's like you rocking, you know, some fresh Air Jordans, but your whole outfit is busted. You know what I'm saying? Or you got a fresh outfit, but the shoes are busted. It all has to come together.
100%. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
They got to be an overall package at the end of the day.
Definitely. But I mean, but as you move along, man, what have you found in terms of really getting to interact with your fans? You know, really talking to people. How's it feel to really know that people are really rocking with what you're doing?
I mean, it feels great. You know what I mean? Especially, you know, this game is kind of designed to discourage you. So you know, even like I didn't think the dopest artists, like, you know, not get their proper, you know, due. Like, I done seen a lot of dope artists that, you know, didn't gain no attention. But I will say that for me, you know, I've been blessed. It's humbling. And, you know, it's always room for improvement.
One thing we have noticed with you, Shady, about this that we have just thoroughly enjoyed and really appreciated is your understanding of what it entails, the sacrifices you have to make, the intellect that you display, and the humility that is displayed as well. Because some artists come in this game thinking that they're just the shit and can't nobody tell them nothing. They've already made it. And that, you know,
ain't wrong with the Muhammad Ali style confidence, but the difference is Muhammad Ali without the W's. You know,
and
what
he
mean?
Could back it up.
But even the Muhammad Ali style, I think even the great Muhammad Ali was humble at times to sit there and learn. He wasn't all the time like that. I mean, of course, in front of the cameras, it was cool. It was marketable for him. But I think behind closed doors, he was able to listen and understand what it took to be great, even to have that confidence. You got to listen. At some point in time, you have to be able to listen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man, and that's something a lot of artists have to understand.
Being confident, you gotta be a good student.
Right, 100%. I agree with that. Gotta be a good student.
Yeah, and that's something that you know, because from student, that's where you learn the academics that help you advance. You know, I never seen a dunce, you know, have any direction in terms of their drive. But I always see the smartest kid in the class who stunts on him because he has a sense of where he's trying to go to succeed. Indeed, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, so that is that's just what you got to do with it, man. But I mean, look, you know, it's all about just, you know, pressing on. We're coming up on 10 o'clock. You know, we gotta, you know, get ready for our second Shady. This has been stupendous, man. This has been sensational. This has been super. You know, we appreciate you coming on. You're welcome back anytime. Any new music you got, please send it to us. We're going to push, you know, and, you know, keep doing it. Keep that sense of humility. Keep that academia awesome. And keep pressing like the push button with the genius of gas. No breaks, all brains in the game, man. Keep doing it, man.
Yeah, we all.
I appreciate that. For real, man, I appreciate you guys. Thank you to the whole off the cuff staff. And I appreciate you know the words of encouragement and just you know being behind you know Shady Baby. It really really means a lot.
Definitely, man. Look,
Do you have any shout outs you want to give out and give people your social media panels?
Shout out to Twan Du. Shout out to Miss Angela Covington. Shout out to Off the Cuff Radio. Shout out to Monty Miles. At ShadyBaby_NYC is the Instagram. Yeah, man. Just tap in at ShadyBaby_NYC. ShadyBabyPPV, the YouTube. It's about 11 videos on there. Go have a good time. Go listen to that. Go feel good. But yeah, definitely shout out to Twan the Dude. Off the cuff, I appreciate y'all. And you know, go hit up, go see what Shady Baby's about, and go see what Monty Miles is about also.
Yeah, big shout out to Twan the Dude too, man. We had him on not too long ago as well. That's a real good dude.
Yes, absolutely, man.
So, yeah, man, we right behind you at 100,000%, man. You keep pushing that bird in the sky. And whatever you need to come back on, just let us know, man. We definitely going to keep in touch.
All right, definitely, definitely.
Yeah. All right, King. So we ready for our next joint?
My bad, man. My phone had got cut off.
You good, you good.
Like,
you good, you good, you
I'm
good.
I'm talking. I was like, what's going on? But anyways, man, we're approaching hour number two, man, and we're going to go on a brief music break. We're going on a different route on Off the Cuff Radio for this second hour here, man. We're going to play this track here that goes by the name of Rise. And we're going to be interviewing actually rock artists. So we're going to see where this is going to go. It's called Rise from Fool Shine. We're going to bring these guys on for the second hour. Let's go.
Yep.
Save me.
Buddy Boy Entertainment, King Eric, Team Max in the building. What's good, man? That was Rise.
Yeah.
So.
And one thing about it, y'all, on Off the Cuff Radio, we're blessed to do this. While we are hip hop oriented, we are not just limited to hip hop. We like to think that our range, our genres, our expertise in interviews spans. We've interviewed wrestlers, we've interviewed chefs, photographers, actors, actresses, and tonight we're interviewing a rock band. And from that song, you know, we just heard, it definitely emotes a lot of that sincere, you know, you hear the sincerity, you hear the careful in composition, you hear the tenacity and the talent. And this dynamic duo right here definitely embodies the rock and roll spirit of what it means to get it and do it on your own. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, we got Fool Shine on the air, y'all. What's going on, y'all?
How's it going, man? So first of all, this is Jordan here. Ryan.
Okay.
So you guys just got me. So I'm gonna do my best to represent Fool Shine here. But how you guys doing?
We're good.
We're good, man.
We're
blessed.
Glad to meet you. Great to have you on. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Definitely. Definitely. Listen to your song Rise. The cover art of the single itself definitely is inspirational in terms of how, you know, you're rising into the stratosphere with the wings, you know, of inspiration for that ideal. Listening to it, I definitely got a vibe of, from the bass line, a little bit of Stone Temple Pilots, and, of course, the voice definitely reminded me a little bit of Scott Whalen and Eddie Vedder put together, of course, from Stone Temple Pilots and Pearl Jam, respectively. The sound is unbelievable in terms of really having that gritty, just a very, very, very organic type of vibe. Please tell us about yourselves, how y'all got into the game. I mean, and what inspired you to do music?
Well, man, me and Ryan have been playing music together for probably 15 years now. We go way back. But this current project, we started in 2020. So we just kind of, life just took us in different directions. You know, we moved to different cities and stuff. He had different jobs and whatever. So we kind of briefly stopped doing music for a while. But in 2020, we just kind of reconvened. You know, we both realized that, you know, how much we needed this in our lives, how much we missed it. So we just decided to get back into it, man, and do it right this time.
Definitely.
Especially with a lot
now
of
you
things.
Both. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I said, especially with a lot of things about us going on now too, because 2020 was a very challenging year, and you know, people was looking for good music to get them by, and you know, especially good music with a message. And I think that, you think that was a part of the motivation for you guys coming back as well?
Yeah, for sure. It's funny you guys mentioned the message, because that's kind of the founding thing. Like, it was a two-pillar, you know, approach for us. It was, our goals were to bring back, like, we felt like there wasn't enough of this type of music, this type of rock music. We wanted to help to kind of bring more of that to people. And also the message is a big part of it. It's, you know, as far as the messaging of the music, of the albums, all that, it's all about it's all about positivity. It's all about spreading, you know, good messages to help people and to I guess, promote people to become the best version of themselves, you know?
Definitely. And I think one thing about it with music, it's always about being inspirational, uplifting. Now, you both come from Trenton, New Jersey, from Jersey, and, you know, Jersey itself, you know, not only from hip-hop, has a very distinguished rock pedigree as well, most notably, you know, the bands Trickster, Bon Jovi, among others. It's definitely, what was it like growing up, and who were some of your influences that inspired you both to play?
Well, man, growing up where we did, it was great. I mean, we played a lot in a lot of places in Philly, because we're so close to Philly, too. So Philadelphia was a hot spot for us. The Stone Pony was a great spot to play. Bon Jovi all played there, and Springsteen. So we had a lot of iconic places to play up here. But then also influences. I mean, for me personally, Dave Grohl, Foo Fighters, that's
yeah,
for me.
Yes, Life After Nirvana.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, God.
Nirvana.
Yes.
Yeah, Nirvana, Foo Fighters.
Yes.
All those, you mentioned STP. That was big for me, too. All those kind of bands. But then even currently, I would say for both of us, right now, Chris Stapleton, country artist, we're getting really big into him. And it's kind of coming out in our writing, too. Like, we're kind of meshing the rock and country genre a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at it, when you're having that amalgam of different genres and fusing them together, you know, because when you're looking at country, you know, you're looking at, like, people like, of course, outlaw country, of course, like Johnny Cash, you know, to the
exactly.
more mainstream, like Travis Tritt, you know, Billy Ray Cyrus, you know, Clint Black, you know, all of them, you know, Kenny Rogers. It's, you know, it's so, it's one thing about in terms of how, like you said, it blends those emotions. And country really, really, really has a lot of emotive elements to it in terms of really going to the fundamental core of human nature, because it's so pure in how, you know, it's produced. You know, it's really about a very, at times, being in the country, a very Spartan, a very just regular lifestyle and just expressing yourself through song. What was it like really finding, you know, for you both finding your sound in terms of what you all were putting together?
You know, it just kind of happened over time. We went from playing heavy stuff when we were younger. We used to play, like, hard rock. And it kind of went from hard rock to basically just acoustic stuff. And we kind of found the sweet spot, let's say, now in the middle. We tend to always play acoustics on most every track, and we kind of blend that with the electric guitar and the drums and stuff, and it gives us a cool sound. And it's kind of in between the hard rock and with the acoustic rock all mixed in there. And it's funny you mentioned the outlaw country. That's been one of our biggest influencing genres right now, like Johnny Cash and even Willie Nelson, all those guys from back in the day, Chris Stapleton. That's an awesome genre, man.
Yeah,
you know,
and when you talk about the heavier stuff, you know, that also brings to mind. Oh, go ahead, King.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead. You go ahead.
Yeah, well, we also bring up what you're talking about, the heavier elements, too, of course. You know, I think about the bands from New Jersey as well as My Chemical Romance and Overkill, but then also that, but you also have that working everyman vibe in it, like Bruce Springsteen, you know, the ball, you know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Obviously, where you're from influences it a lot. From where you've seen rock music over the years, because, you know, King and myself are older, so we grew up watching everybody, you know, from the B-52s to Prince and Michael. We watched Bruce Springsteen when he did Born in the USA. We, of course, Kenny Loggins with Footloose. Lita Ford, Kiss Me Daily, of course. Smithereens, who's also from New Jersey, you know, with the song A Girl Like You, mm-hmm. Heart. You know, I mean, we came up in an era where in the 80s and 90s, it was just different in terms of there was just this beautiful, just this beautiful conceptions. It was just really just about the music being, it didn't really seem to be any boundaries, because what hit, it hit organically. And when it hit organically, it gained a cross section of an audience. You know, the demographics were not bound by color or nationality or environment.
Yeah.
It was a hot song. Everybody could relate to it. How do you see the music industry change right now, and especially with rock music, is how it is marketed now?
Man, I got to tell you, I think the 90s was probably my favorite time in music. I think the 90s into early 2000s was a great time, dude. You know, and it seems like, it almost feels like now with pop music that the 80s are kind of coming back. You know, like a lot of the style and the music and even fashion and stuff and pop music, I'm seeing a lot of stuff that is like the 80s, you know. So I'm honestly hoping that the 90s come back around again too, to be honest, because that would, you know, that goes right hand in hand with our style. You know, we're big time with the 90s rock. It seems like nowadays rock music is, you know, with mainstream rock, you get a lot of, I mean, quote-unquote sellouts and stuff, and it's just about money. You know, they're songs and stuff, and it's not, like you keep saying, organic. It's not organic. It's not real. You know, we're trying to definitely go the opposite direction and be real.
Yeah. And when you speak on the 90s, you're speaking on a level also, too, where we had a lot of, you know, I'm a huge heavy metal fan myself. Slayer, Anthrax, Testament, Exodus,
me too.
Pantera, Death Angel,
Tool.
Forbidden.
Tool, man.
Yeah, Tool, Maynard James Keenan. Oh, my God. I mean, and of course what he did with A Perfect Circle. Of course the song Judith, for any Perfect Circle fan, you know Judith. I mean, oh, God. I mean, you know, so it just really was something where, even with the grunge movement, even though a lot of people say Nirvana killed it, of course, what they say.
You know what's crazy about the 90s is, hey, you know what, dog, what's crazy about the 90s that you had like three or four different eras in that one spirit. Like you had the Nirvana era. Then you had the Marilyn Manson era. Then you had the Limp Bizkit era. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the 90s, man. 90s were a great time for music, bro.
Yeah, I mean, you go, of course, Suicidal Tendencies, you know, one of my favorite bands, shout out to Rocky George, one of the most underappreciated guitarists ever in the history of heavy metal music. Living Color, of course, Rage Against the Machine, Soundgarden. When you think about in terms of their melodies, chord progressions, because there's different bands, they're from a lyrical perspective, from a musical perspective, from a sound. If we had to ask you about who inspired you in terms of your chord progressions, in terms of how you structured it, who would you say inspired you from a chord perspective or compositions?
It's a lot of people, man. I mean, I would have to say from a chord progression perspective, probably Chris Stapleton, honestly.
Okay.
But, I mean, the chords that we use, you know, you can use four or five different chords and play almost every rock song or country song.
Right.
You know, it's crazy because there's not that many different combinations that you need to use. And there's a couple sweet spots. You know, DCG is like a sweet spot. You can't go wrong with that. So you can use a lot of the same simple chord progressions and then just strum it a little differently, pick it differently, put a capo on, use a different key. You know, and it's all about, again, at that point, it's all about the melody. It's all about the melody and the lyrics at that point.
Yeah, and especially when you're looking at the keys of it, because rock music and heavy metal primarily is played, and please, you're the musician, so please correct me if I'm wrong, is usually played in the key of A or B, correct? In terms of where...
In metal music? Yeah, usually.
Right. And when you're dealing with, because you're dealing with a lot of the high pitches on it in terms of, especially with distortion, you're going to be more, and you'll definitely be more savvy with it in terms of the beats, in terms of like a 1-2-2-1, or am I, how do your beat count normally goes when you're counting off on your beats in terms of setting the tempo for it?
You're talking about for our songs, for us personally?
For your songs. Really, for your songs or in rock music specifically in terms of how it counts off, but how you know, normally start off your beats in terms of a 1-2-3-4-5-6, anything like in that nature.
Yeah, usually it would be a four count. So you're typically going to count it in quarter notes. So it's just a simple 1-2-3-4, and you go into it. But then, again, every measure would be typically, it depends on the pace of the song and all that kind of stuff, but it's typically going to be counted based off quarter notes. So it'd be 4-4 or 5-4, 7-4, something like that, depending on how many beats per measure. But for us, it's most commonly 4-4 or 5-4 are the most common.
Got you. Now, what have you both found out in terms of, okay, go ahead, King. Go ahead, please.
My bad, man. I was like saying, you know, when y'all was commenting on rock music earlier, it just seemed like the edge, you know, it's kind of like the edge then kind of also kind of left the rock scene as well. You know what I'm saying?
Comparison
to what we did back in that time. And what do you think happened to that? You think it's because the commercialism became more profitable and that kind of made rock take a back seat?
Man, I don't know. I mean, I think it has a lot to do. There's probably a lot of different factors, but I think the business side of everything just took over. I mean, it was obviously, you had the business back then, back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, but I just think it just became all about money. I think rock music is trying to fit in with pop music. You know, I think they're just trying to fit in that genre. You know, it all comes back to business. So, I mean, you talk about all those bands like Nirvana and Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, all those guys from Seattle, Alice in Chains, you know, they were huge bands, but they weren't doing it for a reason. You know, they were playing music that they loved.
You know, and one thing about it, which you said about the game of music in terms of what they love, I have to think about what happened before. Because when we look about what happened with Kurt Cobain with Nirvana, rest in peace, one thing about Kurt was never comfortable with the idea of celebrity because all he wanted to do was play music.
Right.
You know, and I think because, and I will never forget this because I used to love to stay at my aunt's house because she would let us stay up as late as we wanted. So I will never forget this. This was around August 1991, and I was up late. And I was, you know, I was watching Headbangers Ball, shout Ricky Ratman. And it was the last video they were playing, and I heard this. I seen this video, this camera panning in a gym, and I heard this. And then all of a sudden I hear Dave Grohl coming on the drums, and then I hear the guitar just, and I'm like, oh my God, what is this? So then the next day, so you know, because you see you know how MTV had the graphics in the lower left, you know, Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit, You Spare It, Never Mind, DGC Records. So I'm hearing the song, and I'm thinking like, dude, this is gonna be huge. And then a month later, they're on Headbangers Ball.
yeah.
You know, but it was like, it had an attitude, and I think where we're still having, you know, we were still having that kind of that continuation because grunge was, people have to understand where grunge really started, and it didn't start with Nirvana. Nirvana was where it became the most famous. But when you think about Soundgarden's Louder Than Love album that was released in 1989, when you think about Mother Love Bone, you know, with Andrew Wood, who was singing with them, you know, before he passed, because Pearl Jam was kind of born out of Mother Love Bone. I think Stone Gossard and all those guys were with them before they, you know, before the band is off. So then, of course, you know, you have Soundgarden with Bad Motorfinger that drops their album in 1991, which they would achieve super success with Super Unknown, released in 1994. And we're still not mentioning Alice in Chains in 1990 with Facelift. Shout out Jerry Cantrell. You know, rest in peace, Mike Starr, Sean Kenny, you know, rest in peace, Lane Staley. So we're seeing, you know, this new wave of aggressive rock. And then we're still not mentioning bands like My Sister's Machine and all them, you know, that were kind of, you know, similar. So this is, the 90s are beginning to bring about a whole nother level of musicianship and artistry and expression where heavy metal and hard rock dominated. And you could say it was just a natural progression to where after a while people were ready for something new. Because I've always said the genre doesn't die because the true fans are what keep it alive. But it's just people were ready to move on to something else. Yeah, go ahead, King.
I said the true fans and the true musicians.
Yeah, exactly.
What have you found in the music in terms of how is therapy for you and how you have coped? Because obviously, you know, y'all are talented. I mean, what's it like in terms of really getting out there performing and dealing with, you know, what comes with performing and the notoriety and celebrity of it?
Well, man, performing is, that's one of our favorite things. So it's just, we have a great time with it. Right now, it's only the two of us, as you mentioned. We're currently a duo, but so we perform as an acoustic duo typically, but we're working on adding a couple more guys to the band to at least play live with, so we can get back to playing, playing full shows and stuff for tours and stuff like that. But it's been fun, man. It's been good. And as far as dealing with fame and stuff like that, we haven't really experienced that too much yet. We're trying to get to that point. So I'll have to get back to you on that once we come back the next time maybe and talk again.
Well, one thing about it is that, you know, anytime you choose to endeavor in something, you know, that is something in itself. And the people that really want what you do, I mean, in terms of the live performances, I think that's something where people can really appreciate getting to see you guys up close and personal and you all really doing what you do from that perspective of it. What do artists have to understand about being a musician, what it entails in terms of the discipline you have to have, the time it takes in terms of getting your music right, and overall, just understanding, you know, it's 50-50. You may make it, you may not make it.
Well, man, you mentioned discipline. That's huge. Like, it just takes time. It just takes practice. If you want to get great at anything, it just takes practice, man. You got to show up every day, and there's going to be times you don't feel like it. You know, it's like going to the gym. It's like anything else. You just got to keep doing it. So I would say consistency and discipline are huge. Also, you have to be able to be objective with yourself. You know, so like
right.
not everything that you write and put together is going to be a hit or going to be great, you know, objectively. So you have to be able to take a step back from what you're doing and be real with yourself too and be open to outside opinions, you know, all that kind of stuff.
And also, man, when I was trying to get back on, I was looking at some of y'all tour footage from 2004, 2005. I mean, that had to be a beautiful thing, you know, because it's like a treasure right there of y'all journey. Y'all have, like, any documentaries in the work?
No, we don't yet. That'll all be down the road, I think. But, no documentaries yet. Man, 2000, that's going back, 2004, that's... couple of bands ago, man. Good times back then.
But one thing about it being on a journey like you all have been, it's just a testament to your tenacity to keep going with it. You know, in terms of how you all have stayed with it and the love you have for the music, I mean, you both come from Jersey, so obviously it's known for being blue collar, hardworking, never give up, you know, and always pushing forward. You know, that's just the embodiment of, you know, that tri-state area from New York to Philly to Jersey. So when you think about it, ultimately, you know, if a major label came to you and said they wanted to sign you, what would have to be the conditions in terms of it for you both coming on to, you know, a bigger platform in terms of, you know, having a, you know, company behind you?
Well, one thing we wouldn't give up is the ownership of our songs, like the copyrights. So that would be one thing. And that's, you know, that's a lot of times is the issue with a major label. You know, people get hung up on is that. So I would say definitely I wouldn't give up the music as far as owning the copyrights of them. But other than that, that's pretty much it. That's like our main condition. Is we're not going to ever give up control of our music or ownership of our music.
And what do artists have to understand about getting into the business in terms of when they sign and how cutthroat the industry can be in terms of what they will try to do to leverage your creativity for commerce.
Yeah, the business side of it is tricky, man. That's one thing that we did. We did all that first. So we haven't done that in the past. So when we started this project, we set up an LLC for the business, made a company for it. You know, we copywrote all the music, we trademarked everything, we did all that. We got, you know, we have an attorney we work with, stuff like that. All that kind of stuff is things that everyone should do when they start doing music. And then if you want to actually start getting paid for streams and album sales and stuff, you have to get on Sound Exchange, you have to get on, you know, on BMI or ASCAP, something like that, to get paid royalties and all that good stuff. You know, there's a lot of ways you can make sure you're getting paid, but you just have to do your research and do it all.
And, you know, and also, most importantly, is also having the right team. You don't have a solid team in the business, man, everything can crumble real quick.
Yes, having the right people around you is super, super important, man. You have to trust people.
As well as that supporting cast. That's what I'll be telling people, man. Like, when you're trying to build your base, you got to have what we would consider your core 300. Like, even if the millions of people don't rock with you no more, that core 300 will still come to the show. They still going to download the music. Find that core 300, you can eat for life. You feel me?
Yeah, that's all you need, man. A couple hundred hardcore fans, man. That's all you need. Legit.
And one thing about it, too, like King said, because, and both of y'all said, you know, that we have to echo, is that the main thing is your real fans are never going to leave you, no matter the genre, whether you're hard, whether you're country, whether you're rock, whether you're heavy metal, whether you are hip-hop. The people that really rock with you are going to be with you because you made something that they feel represents them. It speaks to them. You're their voice for their feelings. And, you know, that's how you can see bands like the Rolling Stones still tour. You know, that's how you see AC/DC still tour. That's how you see Jay-Z, Ghostface. That's how you see, you know, a lot of country singers, you know, Travis Tritt, you know, Billy Ray Cyrus, how they're still able to tour because they have those hardcore fans. And when you have people that really
line. Oh, sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead, please. Go ahead, please.
No, I was just going to, you said something that sparked, you know, in my head. I was going to say it's the same thing with, you know, we keep going back to Kurt Cobain, but, you know, your hardcore fans, they allow you to tour forever, but they can also keep your music alive long after you're gone. You know, Kurt Cobain has been gone for 30 years now, and you hear that his music on the radio still. It doesn't die. It'll never die, you know. That's what it's all about.
The same thing with Tupac, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, when Tupac was so influential in terms of the impact that he had for so many people, that he is still revered today. And that is something I think at the end of the day that is worth more than money, it's worth more than celebrity. It's the fact that people, because sometimes in music, this is a part of the industry I hate in terms of how a lot of stuff, in terms of how people become posers, in terms of being counterfeit fans. They really don't understand it until it's fashionable. They don't like someone until it's fashionable to like them. But if you ask them really about the beginnings of it, they couldn't tell you.
Right.
And to me, if you're a devoted fan, you understand the artist, you know their story, you know the story behind their music. Because to really appreciate the music, you have to understand what went into it. And we are now caught up in a situation in society now where a lot of people, you know, they really don't understand. Like with Tupac, Tupac's one of the greatest ever, but you have a lot of, you know, people who are either casual fans, which is okay because they just like the music they hear. They don't necessarily have to,
you know, be super fans, but they appreciate the art. And then you have the phony fans that say that they're like the biggest Pac fan, but couldn't tell you the history, you know, in terms of anything
that,
after.
What it is with that, though, I think what it is with that is there's nothing wrong
mm-hmm.
with casual fans as long as they're open to listen.
Right,
as long
right,
as they're open
right.
to be educated, that's fine. But when you got the arrogant fans, see, that's what controls a lot of the today is the people that are stubborn and don't want to learn about history. So they come with their narrative and they push their narrative and they don't want to be open to listen to anything. That's what confuses the masses.
Right. Yeah, but a lot of times it's just really about, you know, and being an artist, what does it take to really, try to catch people's attention of it in terms of really, you know, because we see a lot of artists that don't always get the attention or the adoration until later. What have you both found out in terms of songwriting and how you have to, in producing songs, performing and giving it time to marinate and really getting the people to really, really, really see the talent.
Well, a lot goes into it, man. I mean, again, it's taken us years to get to this point as far as songwriting and all that stuff. I mean, it's like the hook. The hook is important, you know. You
right.
have to have the hook. You have to have it in the right spot. I mean, it depends on what style of rock you're writing, the length of the song, you know, getting, you know, the chorus. The chorus has to be the best, should be the best part of the song, the catchiest part of the song, and also
right.
the message of the song, you know, something that people can relate to. It's got to be real.
Yeah.
You know?
When you look at some of the iconic hit songs from any genre, which ones would you say really had a hook or a chorus that really, really, like, just was like when you heard it, you were like, this is it, this is the definition, this is what makes it, you know, iconic?
So many of them, man. The one that comes to mind, there's a couple. I would say
we
Sweet
got
Home
a little
Alabama.
Bit of time. Yeah,
yeah, that's an all-time great one, man. You guys know, I'm sure you do, Sublime. So What I Got by Sublime, that's a great one, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Really strong chorus. And, of course, Kurt Cobain was a genius when it came to choruses. They were all, a lot of them were great.
Man, when I think about Come As You Are, he's like, come as you are, as you were, as I want you to be. I'm like, man. And of course,
oh,
on Bloom.
And Bloom, yeah, Lithium.
Yeah, he's
Lithium, too.
He's the one that, like, all our pretty songs, and he likes to sing along, and he likes to shoot his gun, but he knows not what it means. I'm like, it was just genius.
Yeah, dude. But it's simple. It's all simple, too. Like, that's
yeah.
one of the main things with Cobain and those guys, a lot of those bands, the music was simple. It was just
mm-hmm.
it was very well written. It was catchy. You know, it was powerful.
Yeah, I mean, when you think of Alice in Chains, I mean, on Wood, you know, when he was, when Lane was singing, into the flood again. I'm trying to think of that chorus. And I'm having a brain fart on it. But it was like, it was just really about, you know, because that was Wood, that was from the single soundtrack. You know, and it was like he just Lane to me had one of the most emotive and haunting vocals ever committed to record. I think
sure,
though
man.
When we look at when we think about what happened to him, you know, rest in peace, you know, he died of a heroin overdose. One of the most beautifully haunting performances had to be when Alice in Chains did that. I believe it was 19, 99 or 2000 MTV Unplugged. And he did
Nutmeg. Yeah, that was iconic, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh, that gives me goosebumps. Ooh.
Yeah, that was Alice in Chains Unplugged. That's one of the all-time great concerts, man. That was such a great live performance.
Yeah. When you think of iconic performances, who comes to mind in terms of people that you've seen live or video footage that you've seen that really was like, wow, these people really don't understand how to put on a show?
Man, I got to tell you. So as far as live goes, I've seen a lot of live shows. There's two that stick out to me as the best I've seen. So Alice in Chains live, even without Lane, their new singer, William Duvall, is fantastic.
Yes.
Ooh, he's fantastic.
He is. Yeah, yeah.
And,
Him and Jerry singing in harmony. Yeah,
they're still doing it, man. And, dude, so when I saw them, I saw them a couple times. When they play Rooster, their song Rooster live, and incredible. And then number two, I mentioned these guys before, too, Tool. Seeing Tool live, I just saw them last month. Dude, that's the most complete show I've ever seen. It's incredible, dude. All four of those guys, as far as musicians, they're at the top. They're all top notch. And for a live show, the visuals they have, the light show, everything, dude. It's the whole package. There's nothing like it that I've seen.
And when you see Maynard sing, he pretty much goes against every convention that vocal coaches will tell you about how you posture your body.
Yeah, he does.
And I mean, Maynard just does it. I mean, Maynard can just, the way he contortions his body, just the way he sings, it's like.
Yeah, it's strange, man. It's strange, but like, it works. And somehow he's a great singer, too. He pulls it off,
yeah.
And the way he sings, the way he performs too, he actually stands behind the drummer, like he stands like to the side of Danny Carey when they perform, and kind of up above.
Yeah.
So it's like the bassist and the guitarist in the front, and then you got the drummer on a riser, and you have Maynard singing on a riser next to the drummer. You know, so it's, everything about that.
Yeah,
about that band.
Yeah, they said Maynard. Because they said Maynard has a. He's not – Maynard is a genius. I mean, probably Enema is probably their – I mean, Lateralist and Enema probably are the albums that really stand out, even though their debut was just unbelievable. I still remember, you know, of course, the lead-off single Sober and Prison Sex. And, I mean, you got to remember, this is going back into the 90s, so this is like the videos are trippy as hell to watch.
They still are today. They still are.
But when you see Maynard is a very enigmatic figure. He's a very nice guy. It's just that he doesn't necessarily like being out in the open, which is why he prefers to stand to the back. I heard he has a bit of a phobia about being up front. He doesn't necessarily like being the center of attention. So he's more comfortable in the back. Like, I've heard he will not come out until actually it's time for the show to start. You know, you will not see him until it's time for the show to start.
Yes, I can definitely see that about him. Maynard's a different type of dude, man. He's a different guy. But that's one of my top bands, man. I can't explain, like, how good they are live. People need to see it. You have to see it.
Now, musician-wise, in terms of their timing, their time signatures, their cue, you know, their how they put together. I mean, because some of those songs, when you listen to it, like 46 and 2, like I said, Sober, Prison Sex. I mean, those are like, you know, some of those breakdowns and those rhythms are just like, I mean. From a musician's ear, what makes them so special in terms of what they do musically?
Man, Danny Carey, first of all, the best rapper on the planet. There's nobody else like them. I mean, they're rhythmically, it's almost, they're a band that you can listen to them and you can learn something new. You can pick up on something new every time you hear one of their songs, because their songs are very, very complex, you know. And they'll go from, they'll change timings, time signatures, 4, 5, 6 times in one song, you know, and they'll go back and forth. And a lot of times Danny, what the drummer is playing is a different timing than what the guitar is, you know, and they overlap.
Right.
A lot of stuff like that, too. It's just, they're very complex, but as a musician, it pushes you, because if you want to try to understand it, you have to grow from it. You have to expand your knowledge.
You are not the first person to say to rave about Danny Carey in terms of him being the best drummer out there.
Telling you, man.
You know, because I've heard, obviously I've listened to them, you know, but I, you know, when I think about drummers, I think about guys like Sid Falk from Overkill. I think about, rest in peace, the great, late, great Nick Menza from Megadeth, who used to be with them. You know, Mike Portnoy, who used to play with Dream Theater, Gene Hoglan, you know, played with Death, Testament, Obituary.
I mean,
you
got talking about John Bonham. You got Neil Peart.
Yes, from Led Zeppelin.
You know, you got,
yes.
Yeah. There's so many great ones, man. But just my opinion, man, nobody can touch Danny Carey. And it's not even about, like some of these metal guys. There's faster drummers. Like, and it's not just about speed, but it's just about the complexity and the polyrhythms and all that kind of stuff. I've never seen anybody that can do what he does. And to compose that. So, like, you know, some people can do it. They can kind of cover what he's doing, but he creates it, you know. It's a different level.
Guitar-wise, who would you say is probably one of the top guitar players that really influenced you?
Guitar-wise, for me, it's the way I play guitar, Dave Grohl, for sure. He's one of my top influences in general. But you ask Ryan,
bass.
He'd probably say somebody else.
Okay,
you know?
What about bass?
Bass? Oh, bass man, John Paul Jones, all the way. Zeppelin.
I mean, okay, we got two. We got John Paul and we got John.
John Paul Jones, man, from Zeppelin, is he's the bassist. He's the top bassist for me.
Yeah. But that's obviously, you know, the influences you all have is definitely what makes you all, you know, who you are with it, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, I mean, Jordan, I mean, from that level up. I mean, okay, Jordan, so we got guitar, we got bassist, we got drums. All right, singers. Who? All right, Jordan, so singers. Who does it for singers?
I got to stick with my 90s people, man. I got to go Lane Staley, but also Chris Cornell. Chris Cornell.
Rest in peace, Chris. Yes, Power Slave. Rest in peace, Chris. I mean, that guy's range was wow.
Yeah, he had a lot of soul to his voice too, man. He was very he could do a lot.
I think for what I was thinking of Chris Cornell, what he did on Black Hole Sun, because it has a very Beatles-esque feeling when it comes in, you know, in terms of the guitar harmonics, and then when it just kind of brings in, you know, that little, Matt Cameron drops in with the drums, you know, the beat itself isn't complex, but it's just very, I mean, just the punch behind it. And, you know, when he overlays that, when he overlays it going into the chorus where he has the screaming over the moan, I mean, but that was one of the songs that really show, like, his true talent. But matter of fact, off of that Super Unknown album, Limo Rack, I know you've heard it.
Soundgarden, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. When I first heard Limo Wreck, I was just blown away because of the urgency and the agony behind it. You know, when he breaks into, and the wreck of you is the death of you all.
Yeah,
and the
yeah.
wreck of you is the break and the fall. I was like, oh my God. Like, the way he just jumped it out was like, oh my goodness. I was like, whoa.
Like, yeah, man. Not many people can do what Chris did, man. Not many people.
Yeah.
He's special.
It's like the opening five, six of a song. You know it's going to be a hit. Or you know it's going to be a smash. You know what I mean? It could be just like the opening 5 seconds. You just already know. That's how magical the 90s was.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And it came back to me what you said about Lane, of course, on a single, you know, on Woody said, you know, into the flood again. Same old trip as it was back then. I mean, the way he just, you know, but he could just go from that upper register to that lower register, and he could just compress and just belt it just effortlessly. You know, it was just, you know, I mean, even when you have Zat LaRocca from Rage Against the Machine, how he would have his spoken word over the music, you know, it just all worked. You know, Scott Weiland, you know, of course, Robert Plant was Zeppelin, you know, how he could just get out there, you know, and get, you know, the Beatles with their harmonics. It just, musically, I think it just shows from a perspective of it all, man, like everything, we're all connected through it. No matter where we come from, there's always a song from any genre we can relate to. And I think as people, that's what unites us. We find we're not so different after all. And, you know, doing shows like this, to interview people like yourself, we find this enriching. We find this educational. We find it enjoyable. And, you know, we learn something, you know.
Exactly.
From you. We got a little bit of time left. We're about to close shop. Jordan, this has been tremendous, man. You know, y'all welcome back anytime. You know, hopefully we can, you know, get you and Ryan back on together. Any shout-outs you'd like to give? Any closing remarks you'd like to, you know, have?
Yeah, man. Well, first of all, just once again, I want to thank you guys for having me on tonight. This has been a great conversation. Really appreciate you guys. So, yeah, shout out to Off the Cuff Radio. Shout out to WhoMag for helping set this up. Shout out to DJ CatX again for helping set this up. And shout out to our attorney, Simon Rosen. He's a great music attorney. Anybody out there wants some legal help with music type stuff, he's your man. So. But again, dude, thank you so much for having us on tonight. I really appreciate that.
Tell your attorney we would love to have him on the show, too.
Man.
You never had a lawyer on a show.
Yeah, man, I'll try and set that up.
Yeah,
always.
Definitely.
Always, man, we definitely appreciate you joining us, man. And I also want to say a big shout-out to Angela for making this happen. So... We're gonna tune out on this episode here, man. Thank you once again for joining us, and we'll be right back next week.
Jim. All
right, you guys, take care, okay?
Take care and be blessed.
Right,
thank you, and stay rocking.
You too, man. Rock on.
Yes, peace. Be blessed, and we are out. One.